This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Wheeler knocked it away from Mangiapane. Scheifele to Wheeler. Wheeler to Byfuglien, scores! Dustin Byfuglien. 26 seconds into overtime. It gets turned over. And Wheeler, Scheifele combined to set up Dustin Byfuglien, and the Jets will win this one 4-3.
Last night at Bell MTS Place, the Winnipeg Jets were victorious in their third preseason game of the season, coming back to defeat the Calgary Flames by a 4-3 margin. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell. I'm joined in studio by my colleagues, Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg, Sean Assor, producing this fine radio program. You can reach us here in studio via Twitter. You can send your tweets to at Illegal Curve, and of course our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is illegalcurve.com. We start on this Saturday morning with last night's Jets victory over the Flames. We'll look back at the first three exhibition games in what will be a seven-game exhibition season for the Jets. Four games starting on Sunday all the way through next Thursday. Dave, last night the Jets, of course, with that 4-3 victory over the Calgary Flames. That was, again, it's preseason, so I'm not going to read too much into a win or a loss, but boy, that Flames roster last night was pretty thin in their first contest back in North America.
After Gilbert Brulé.
Yeah, after they started, he's on a PTO in Flames camp. After they started their preseason overseas in China against the Bruins for a couple games, Jets saw the Flames, you know, I guess they were more interested in winning the game to start with.
Dave's been to China, by the way.
I have.
Was he there with the Flames and the Bruins?
No, you were there, what, 2 years ago?
3. 2015.
Have a good time?
I did have a great time. Walked the Great Wall of China.
They renamed it the Great Dave of China at that point in time. Anyways, last night's Jets-Flames game. Any sort of insights, any takeaways that you saw in last night's game? I mean, the Jets fielded a much more veteran roster than the Flames did, and you would have thought that the Jets would have been able to handle the Flames a little bit easier, not having it go into overtime, not having it to have required a comeback after being down 2-0 and 3-1. I mean, again, it doesn't matter. It's the preseason. But any takeaways from the game last night?
Well, you know, the truth is that while you expect the team like the Flames fielded to come in and kind of get bombed by the Jets, you know, everybody was saying, oh, this should be an 8-2 Jets win. The truth is that a lot of these guys, especially the ones on PTOs, are fighting for their potential careers. And a lot of these guys are looking to come in and equate themselves well and make an impression on the brass. So from their perspective, they're not just going to come in here and, you know, be fodder for the Jets to improve the power play or do, you know, work on their systems play. I mean, these guys are, you know, they're professionals and they have a desire to win and desire to, like I said, to play well and make an impression. So I wasn't terribly surprised. The Jets didn't really seem that interested in the game. You know, they had a number of power play opportunities. Patrick Laine missed a couple of, you know, his one-time shots that could have opened up the game early. And because of that, the Flames managed to kind of take an early lead on that really nice goal by Pollock. Not Richard Pollock, but by Pollock over Connor Hellebuck's...
Brett Pollock is his name.
Yeah.
That was a beauty.
It was. It was absolutely a beautiful goal. And he went up and over Connor Hellebuck, and I don't know that Connor Hellebuck was expecting him to be able to place it that nicely.
I don't think he was, Dave. If you watch the replay,
yeah.
Hellebuck, I think, is expecting Brett Pollock to go behind the net,
mm-hmm.
and he just roofs it, as Dave mentioned, top corner. It was a nice shot, but Connor Hellebuck mentioned it after the game. After he let in the first couple of goals, he said, okay, I'm ready to go here. I know what I did wrong. You know, I want to get into this game now.
Yeah, and you know, like he settled in eventually, and like that's kind of what you would expect in his first game action since the playoffs of last year. And so from his perspective, he eventually got, you know, into the mode. And Paul Maurice said he wasn't even looking at, before the game, he said, I'm not even going to be looking at Connor Hellebuck to really be worried about whether he lets in, you know, 2 goals or 0 goals or 10 goals. I don't think he would be particularly concerned about his goaltender from one preseason game.
And you make a good point, Dave, because I think a lot of Jets fans watching that game were getting a little bit nervous, right? Because the Jets didn't lead in that game at all.
Yeah.
I mean, they tied up the game with, what, 60 seconds left, 61 seconds left, and obviously they get the win. And as you mentioned at the top of the show, Drew, it's a preseason game. Nobody's going to remember whether the Jets won this game or not. Nobody cares what the Jets' record is. It's 2-1 now, but whether they're 4-3 or 5-2, it's the regular season that matters, right? This team is trying to win the Central Division. It's trying to go back to the Western Conference Final and hopefully to the Stanley Cup Final. And when you look at this Calgary Flames team, and we talked about it, you're talking about six guys that are on PTOs. But when you're talking about a guy like Alan Kwine, I thought he was really impressive last night. This is a guy that played the last 2 years with the Islanders organization. At one point, I think he was 60% in the faceoff circle. And, you know, Buddy Robinson, ex-Manitoba Moose. I mean, these are guys that are trying to make an impression on the coaching staff. And then, sure, you have some other players like Andrew Mangiapane and, you know, Dylan Dubé. These are guys that, you know, are coming out of junior hockey. Dylan Dubé was a standout with the Kelowna Rockets, and I thought, you know, he scored a nice goal on Hellebuck as well. But as soon as the Jets wanted to take over the game, and it was late in the game, but they took over the game. And, you know, I think when you're looking at these exhibition games, you also have to consider who's in the lineup for the Jets. I mean, when you're talking about Peter Stoykowicz and Nelson Noje, I mean, these are guys that are getting their first preseason action. I mean, these players are going to be rusty.
Let me ask you guys this. I mean, we've talked about, you know, for the last, you know, last week, certainly when the training camp was just getting underway and we were at the Bell MTS Iceplex for the Jets Fan Fest. We're talking about the training camp battles, and we know that there's that big battle sort of for that final forward spot there, playing on the, you know, generally the right side of what people expect to be Perreault and Roslovic, and then that question mark position. What matters more in determining who's going to get that spot? Performance in these preseason games, or do you think performance in actual training camp and, you know, on-ice skates?
Both.
Both? You think that Paul Maurice and his crew are putting as much weight into the games where you're playing against competition that certainly isn't NHL competition on some nights, that they're sort of equal weighting the two?
Well, Drew, as you know, the coaching staff, they watch everything.
Sure.
Right? Paul Maurice, Charlie Huddy, you know, Jamie Compan, Woodcroft, all of these guys, they're watching these players on the ice in drills. They want to make sure that these guys are laser focused at all times, right? I think Marco Dano has been very impressive in the two games that he's played.
He's got two goals so far.
Not only does he have the goals, but I think he's actually had an impact on both of those games. And yeah, the game against the Oilers, Drew, it fell off the rails in the third period. Connor McDavid, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, Ty Ratty, they combined for, what was it, 11 points, 12 points? I was doing the pregame show and postgame show.
Ratty had 5 points himself that game.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, that line took over in the third period. But when you're talking about, you know, that third line spot, I agree with you. Andrew Kopp, Adam Lowry, Brandon Tanev, that's going to be your fourth line, whether you want to call it the fourth line or 3A, 3B.
Sure.
Right? So right now, it's between Christian Vesalainen and Marco Dano, as far as I'm concerned. And I think Marco Dano probably has the leg up just because he was that 13th forward last year. He didn't play a full season. He was a healthy scratch a lot of the time. But I think, you know, he's making an impression, and he's, you know, giving Paul Maurice and the coaching staff, you know, something to think about. Maybe I should be given a little bit more of an opportunity here on the third line. But, you know, right now it's tough to say, you know, who that third player on that line is going to be. I agree with you. I expect Jack Roslovic to be centering that third line and Matty Perreault to be one of the wingers on that third line. And you could maybe throw in Brendan Lemieux in there. And, you know, we also have to mention, unfortunately, Nick Petan's not with the team right now. And obviously your thoughts go out to Nick Petan's family. But he's another player that I think has a really good shot at making the opening night roster. But right now, you know, he's just not with the team. So yeah, there's a little bit of uncertainty there.
Exactly. Condolences go out, like you said, Ezzy, to the Petan family on the loss of Nick's father, Frank, earlier this week. And, you know, he's obviously got, you know, his priority right now is to be with his family as a result of that tragedy.
You know, another guy I think we should bring up, and I know Dave's going to love this, is Seth Griffith. He's played all three games.
Mm-hmm.
He picked up an assist on Brian Little's goal, a really nice assist.
Yeah.
And this is a guy that was formerly in the Boston organization, and he's bounced around from a few teams. You know, he played for Buffalo a little bit last year. He's played on Florida as well. But this is a guy that's going to factor in big time for the Moose, Dave, and I think he's looked really impressive in the three games that he's played.
Yeah, and that's what Paul Maurice has talked about, is these games are an opportunity. Like, there's nothing written in stone. If a guy equates himself well, then that's a good thing, and you're going to, you know, potentially get promoted and more opportunities. And Griffith is one of those guys. I mean, he's probably going to be a fairly prolific scorer at the AHL level. Whether he's able to translate that into the NHL, we'll see. But if he gets that opportunity. But yeah, as he is a guy who's, you know, so far he's done the things that he needs to do to get himself noticed. Article was written about him, I think, on the Jets site yesterday. So, I mean, the fact is that, you know, that's what we're talking about. Like, nobody comes in and says, okay, there's every one of these spots is taken. And it's already predetermined, and really this is just a formality, and we have to hold a training camp, and that's it. And now the Jets have a bit of an advantage in the sense that the Moose are not playing any preseason games this year.
So none at all?
None.
Oh, because they used to play a couple down in North Dakota.
In Grand Forks, yeah. Or North Dakota. So what they do is normally they play against the Iowa Wild, but the Iowa Wild this year are playing, for whatever reason, they're playing Tucson at the, I think, in the Minnesota Wild practice facility where Minnesota played. In Iowa.
Yeah, because the Minnesota Wild and the St. Louis Blues just played an exhibition game in Iowa.
Iowa, yeah, they had 14,000.
Yeah, they had a huge crowd there.
Yeah, it was really good. But, and Moose Camp, I don't think it starts till next week. So the reality is the Jets won't have to cut down their roster. Like, aside from, like, what they did with sending the three players back to junior, but they don't have to send anybody to the Moose because Moose Camp doesn't start till next week. So I'm just saying, like, guys will have maybe a little bit longer of an opportunity to stick with the big club and play some games, maybe continue to make impression, maybe make an impression such that you're not going to be sent down in that first round of, you know.
And I think that's really what the exhibition season's all about, right? Like, for me, and I'm not the only one, you look at this game, and to me, the score doesn't really matter.
No.
I mean, you know, another guy that should be mentioned, CJ Cease, a guy that played 4 years at Minnesota State University Mankato. He's a guy that's going to play for the Moose this year. I actually thought he looked pretty good on a line with JC LaPon. I forget who the other guy on that line was, but he was out there with JC LaPon. He picked up an assist on Buff's goal. That was in the second period there. So, you know, you're evaluating some of your young players. I mean, a lot of these players are going to play for the Manitoba Moose this year. I mean, we mentioned Nelson Noje, who had some injury problems last year. I know Dave, you know, is a big fan of Nelson Noje's game, and Peter Stojkovic, who Dave talked to.
Jansen Harkins played for the Jets
last night. He was the guy.
He was the guy on the other line.
And on the other side,
that's probably a Moose line right there.
Yeah,
I mean, that's a line that could very well be together, you know, playing for the Moose this coming season.
Yeah, and you mentioned it off the top, Drew. I mean, the majority of the players that played for the Calgary Flames last night are going to play for the Stockton Heat.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you can't put much stock into this. Yeah, you're happy that you won the game. Buff gets the overtime winner. I mean, you'd rather win the game than lose the game, but
you can't really be upset if they lose the game at that point.
Exhibition
in time.
Games. They don't mean anything.
Four more exhibition games to go, all coming up this week. They play Sunday at home against the Oilers, Monday back in Calgary, Wednesday against the Minnesota Wild down in St. Paul, and then they wrap up the preseason on Thursday against the New Jersey Devils in what is a fairly random opponent. We haven't seen New Jersey up here for a preseason
really,
game ever.
Really weird.
I saw that when the schedule came out. I'm like, how did New Jersey get on that
New
schedule?
Jersey isn't exactly close to Manitoba.
No, I don't know if somebody got confused when they looked at a map or something.
I think they're just doing this thing before they go to Europe. Because aren't they playing? Don't they have a game in Germany after
the Devils?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
I'm pretty sure
the Devils are playing in Sweden to start the season.
I'm also fairly certain that going from
Sweden or Germany?
Sweden. No, I think they're playing a preseason game. Oh no, it's the Oilers who are playing a preseason game in Germany.
Okay.
I don't know if the Devils are as well.
But I'm also fairly certain that going from New Jersey to Manitoba to Sweden is not the closest route to go. In any event, when we come back, we're going to talk about Josh Morrissey. He signed his contract and is, of course, in Jets camp and played in last night's game for the Jets. So that's up next, the Josh Morrissey contract. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN. SN1290.ca.
Brian Little and William Carlson getting set for the faceoff. Little wins it. Morrissey scores! Clean faceoff win by Brian Little. And Josh Morrissey has his first NHL playoff goal. And it's a big one. This game is tied at one.
From last year's Western Conference Final, Game 5 against the Vegas Golden Knights, Josh Morrissey with the blast from the point, tying the game up at one goal apiece.
That goal feels like it happened like 3 weeks ago.
You're saying it was a short off season for
you? Yes.
Okay, well, there you go. Josh Morrissey scoring there. The final goal, I guess, of the 2017-2018 Winnipeg Jets season before the Jets fell to the Vegas Golden Knights. Josh Morrissey.
Ryan Reeves scored the winner in that game, didn't he?
It's true. Ryan Reeves did score the winner in that game. So didn't he come down the left wing, if I recall correctly, and beat Connor Hellebuck with a shot?
It was a tip.
Was it a tip?
Yeah.
Okay. I can't remember. My brain doesn't work as well as it used to. In any event, Josh Morrissey got the last Jets goal last season, and he's under contract now after we were talking about it really for much of the offseason. We were talking about it last week on the program as training camp began. Without Josh Morrissey in camp, it was a two-year, $6.3 million contract for Josh Morrissey with the Winnipeg Jets, the proverbial bridge deal worth $3.15 million per season. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Saturday morning here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. So Ezzy, I'll give you credit. Last week when we were talking about Morrissey and his absence from training camp, you said nothing to worry about. You said this is going to get resolved very quickly. And lo and behold, within about 24 hours after your prognostication, you were correct for once. And Morrissey,
for once?
Well, Dave, this is the guy who said the Oilers were going to win the Cup last year.
Yeah, that's true.
So, I mean, yeah, for once is a valid addendum there.
Everyone has to be right at least once a year, right?
Well, you know, a broken clock is right twice a day. That sort of thing is what they say as well. In any event, Morrissey does sign the contract with the Jets for the $6.3 million, $3.15 million per season. Your thoughts on that deal? And what took it so long to finally get done?
Well, first of all, the second part of that question, it's literally impossible for me to answer that question without speculating.
Yes.
But the first part of that question, I mean, I thought Josh Morrissey was going to get paid a little bit more, and we talked about it over the last 3 or 4 weeks. I thought, you know, he'd be closer to $3.5 million to $4 million on a bridge deal, but I'm on the radio. I'm not a GM in the NHL, and I'm not a player agent, so there's a reason for that, right? So a little bit surprised that he got less money, but not at all surprised, guys, that he got a two-year bridge deal. And we talked about it when we were at Jets Fan Fest last Saturday at Bell MTS Iceplex. I mean, when you're talking about, you know, these contract negotiations, it was pretty clear that the Jets and Josh Morrissey were talking about a long-term contract, whether that's, you know, 6 or 7 or 8 years, but they were too far apart in the AAV. So for me, it's all about getting him signed before this was going to drag on too long, right?
Mm-hmm.
He missed the first 3 days of training camp. I think it would have been a much bigger issue if Josh Morrissey was still unsigned, you know, with 2 or 3 days to go with training camp, as opposed to 2 or 3 days into training camp. So for me, that's what it's all about, because I think we'd all agree that Morrissey factors in big time long term.
Sure.
I think we all expect Josh Morrissey to be part of the Jets organization for a really long time. So for me, that's the most important. As far as, you know, the dollars and cents, I mean, that's good water cooler discussion. You could say, you know, maybe he gets a little bit more. But, I mean, as we know, these contracts are all over the place. I don't think many people thought Dmitry Kulikov was going to get $4.3 million a year. As far as I'm concerned, Josh Morrissey is a much better defenseman than Dmitry Kulikov. Yeah. No offense to Kulikov, but
no,
you know,
there's no question about that.
I think most of us, when we saw that Dmitry Kulikov contract, thought 4.3 for 3 years.
That's right. So that's what I right. thought, not per season.
So let's let the, you know, the managers and the player agents, you know, figure out the dollars and the cents. But for me, it's just nice that he signed and, you know, he doesn't have to worry about it and he can focus on getting ready for the regular season.
Sure. You know, are you surprised, Dave, that, you know, after Morrissey signed, it's like, you know, Darnell Nurse signed almost, you know, a minute later, it seemed like after Morrissey mm-hmm. signed his contract. Are you surprised that Nurse got more than Morrissey did? I mean, not a lot more, a marginal amount more, $3.2 million as opposed to $3.15 million, but from my perspective, I think Josh Morrissey is a better defenseman than Darnell Nurse is.
Yeah, I guess it depends on what you're evaluating, maybe points versus shutdown role. And perhaps, again, I think Morrissey's focus was this is a bet on himself type of contract. And,
yep.
and he's basically saying that I will give you the next 2 years, knowing that players will move out, knowing that opportunities will change for him. His shutdown role with Jacob Trouba, provided Jacob Trouba is still here, will continue, but he'll also get more power play time perhaps over, maybe not this season, but next year for sure. And I think he knows that. And I think he knows that, you know, especially next year when the kind of the whole show me aspect of his contract comes into play, I think you're going to see Josh Morrissey really earn that next long-term deal, which we all expect him to sign. And again, as to a dollar figure, it's hard to say at this point because those contracts will be continuously changing. But the fact of the matter is that I think that he rightly is betting on himself to do very well over the next couple of seasons.
Yeah, and I don't think, guys, many hockey observers are going to be shocked if for Morrissey's next contract, he gets $5 to $6 million a year.
Where does the increase, I mean, you could very well be right, and we'll know more of that in 2 years or 12 months' time, whenever he's eligible to negotiate another contract. Where does an increase in points come for Josh Morrissey?
Well, Dave just talked about the power play, right?
But is he going to get more time on the power play given the current Jets roster?
It'll be on the second power play, because we know that the Jets like to trot out four forwards on their top power play,
right.
And sometimes four forwards on their second power play, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, Dustin Byfuglien is usually out there on the top power play, and then Jacob Trouba also sometimes goes out there on the top power play. At the very least, he's going to be out there on the second power play. But Toby Enstrom is a player over the years that's got some power play time. So I think, Josh Morrissey is going to get more of an opportunity. How much more of an opportunity, I think, remains to be seen. I'd like to see him out there more on the power play. I talked about it last year. I'd like to see Morrissey out there on 3-on-3 because he can skate. And you didn't see Morrissey out there enough, I think, at 3-on-3. And then when he was out there, he was really impressive. So I think he's going to get more opportunities. But I don't know. At this time of year, everybody likes to project points. Like, is Morrissey going to be a 35-point defenseman? Is he going to be a 45-point defenseman? I would say he's probably going to be somewhere around there in that 35 to 45-point range. You forget, he's 23 years old. So his point totals are going to come.
Well,
and as far
that's
as,
a
know,
significant spike, though, if you're thinking. I mean, he had 26 points last year. He had 20 points in his rookie season with the Jets. I mean, if you're – I mean, I think he's got all the talent to be a 35-point defenseman. I just don't know that necessarily it's the opportunity question, because I don't know that he gets that opportunity to really increase his point total in any other situation besides 5-on-5, given the way the Jets deploy their power play, and given the more offensively inclined defensemen, at least right now, that I would say the Jets are going to deploy on the power play ahead of him.
And that's fair, Drew. And that would be, I would imagine, brought into any contract negotiations, that if you're not going to give him the opportunity, well, then he can't obviously get those points. So then you're going to have to pay him based on other metrics. And I think that, Morrissey's camp is going to be very well aware of that. And if you're not, I mean, the truth is, if you're the Jets, you have to give him those opportunities, because the fact of the matter is, if he excels at it, well, then you're going to pay him and you're not going to be upset about having to pay him, because he's going to be worth the money. If he doesn't excel at it, well, his camp cannot say to you, you didn't give me, my player, the opportunity to get those points.
And by the way, if Morrissey hits, 35 or 40 points, that's really good. Like, I think a lot of time we look at points and not everybody can put up 80 to 90 points like Erik Karlsson and Brent Burns, right? Mm-hmm. Most defensemen aren't even around 35 to 45 points. So, I mean, that's not a bad ceiling offensively. And Josh Morrissey's ceiling is not just about his offensive totals. I mean, he's an excellent shutdown defenseman. He's a very intelligent player. We've talked about that a lot. Mm-hmm. Beautiful skater. I mean, this is an all-around defenseman. And so, whether he gets to 35, 40, whatever, is to me, it's just...
If his point total stayed the same...
It's all speculation, whatever.
If his point total stayed the same as where it was last season with, I think it was 26 points, if he puts up another 26 points this year and plays the same quality... shutdown role.
Right.
The Jets are perfectly happy with that. They don't need him to be a 30 or 35 point defenseman. It's an added bonus, but they really can't. They definitely need his defensive side of the game to stay up at that elite level or the same level where it was last season.
You have to factor in that, we know we say this a lot, but I mean, if you look at the career trajectory for defensemen that play a long time in the NHL, their point totals will increase. So, Morrissey's point totals, I think his best years are to come.
Oh, I would agree with that. The question will be, I go back to Darnell Nurse and Darnell Nurse, yep, putting up, very similar numbers. The difference between Nurse and Morrissey is Nurse had so much power play opportunity,
yep,
and he still wasn't able to put up really significantly better numbers than Josh Morrissey. And he wasn't as good in his own zone as Josh Morrissey. So I think Darnell Nurse getting and it's very similar dollar figure. So, it's not a big deal, certainly. And it's the Oilers' money. It's not my money. I think that's sort of the rub there, is that with greater opportunity, Nurse wasn't able to produce, more than Josh Morrissey was with a limited opportunity. We'll find out. In any event, when we come back, Brian Munns joins us for some more talk about the Winnipeg Jets training camp and the exhibition season. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour, Saturday morning. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. And of course, our website, it's got the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio. That's available at IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
You know him, you love him. We're pleased to welcome back to the program Winnipeg Jets color analyst here on TSN Radio, Brian Munns. Munnsy, good morning. How you doing, buddy?
I'm good, guys. How are you?
Doing very well, thank you. Enjoying this fine December weather, are you?
I've been awake for about 8 minutes. So
I've even better.
Yeah, I've taken a peek outside, and I should go back to sleep, it looks like.
100%. Exactly, what you should do. Obviously, Munsey brought you on to talk about Jets training camp, as we've played three exhibition games. And I asked the guys this sort of off the start of the program, as we're, you know, these exhibition games, sometimes it's hard to evaluate the players, because the opposition, especially last night's, you know, Calgary opposition, was limited when it came to their what you expect from a Calgary Flames lineup. So, you know, from Paul Maurice's perspective, from the Jets brass perspective, what do you think that they take more, you know, stock in? Performance during the exhibition games or performance during practices and maybe a scrimmages with the team to evaluate who's going to win some of those final training camp battles to make the Jets roster?
I think, to be honest with you, it's an evaluation in all of those things. You take a look at what the players are able to do in practice, both on and off the ice. You watch their body language a lot as to see how they're reacting to different situations, how they're handling, whether things are going well or if they feel like they're having an off day, how they're able to handle the pressures of that. And you're right. The first week of the NHL preseason is a very different animal than what it's going to be this week moving forward, and then obviously down to those last couple of games that, for the most part, teams will play their National Hockey League roster gearing up for opening night. And everybody goes through it. Like, you look at what was here on Monday night, it was mainly the Iowa Wild with a few NHL players. And then the Jets took a very young club to Edmonton. But it's a great opportunity for those players. And I think that's one thing, and it's hard when you're living in it now, like the entire city of Winnipeg is, but I remember back in the day, and now all of a sudden we're all sounding old, 8 years past, when the Manitoba Moose were affiliated with the Vancouver Canucks, and everybody in the city was excited to see those Moose players get a chance to play in a Vancouver preseason game to see what they could do against their peers and then some better players at the next level. So it's all the process that everybody has to go through at this time of the season, but moving forward here, I would expect that you'll start to see more and more NHL players across the entire NHL get more game time, get a little bit more specific with the mechanics. Obviously, Paul Maurice was able to use his first power play unit last night. With Paul Stastny moving on, we got a chance to see what Kyle Connor can do with those guys. So it's all the necessary evil, if you want to call it that, through the first week, but I think it's been a real positive for everybody involved, and it's given a lot of these young players a great opportunity to get into a Jets jersey, feel the atmosphere even of Bell MTS Place. You know, you talk to some of the Moose guys, and they thought it was pretty cool just to go into the building when there's more than 5,000 people there for a regular season Moose game that they're used to, and just kind of soak in that atmosphere. So it's a great process that everybody's involved with right now. But again, it is kind of nice to get through that first week and start getting a little bit more excited now that we're pretty much into the second half of training camp tomorrow.
Munsey, I know it's still early on in the preseason, but what were your thoughts on the D pairing of Tyler Myers and Dustin Byfuglien? Obviously, Tyler Myers playing on the left side. And do you expect to see that D pair quite a bit this year?
Well, it's a really good option that Paul Maurice and Charlie Huddy have. And I think the one thing that people need to remember coming into this year is the Jets have options, and that is huge compared to what this organization had for really the first 1 to almost 4 or 5 years of players that they have on the blue line. And again, I'm going to throw the reference back to the old Moose in Vancouver. I remember so many times Craig Heisinger saying that you have to have 8, 9, 10 really good defensemen on your roster because you're going to need them at some point during the season if all of a sudden you get hit by injuries. So to have the options right now that Winnipeg has on the blue line with the depth, the young players that are going to be in the American Hockey League is great. But to answer your question, when you look at what they have right now on their playing roster, they developed last year Josh Morrissey and Jacob Trouba into one of the best D pairings in the league, which was able to take a little bit of pressure off Dustin Byfuglien. And now with the way things are playing out, let's see what Tyler Myers can do on that side. Dmitry Kulikov played his offside last night. Ben Sherratt can bounce around a little bit. Joe Morrow can do it. What does Tucker Poolman have? Sammy Niku is going to get an opportunity here after just a terrific year last season. So I think all in all right now, the depth that Winnipeg has on their blue line is a huge bonus for this team. And I think the experience for Tyler Myers is going to be great for him because as both he and Buff joked during the week, they can kind of reach out. And if you're playing Red Rover, they're going to touch you coming across the blue line. So there's a really good option right there for Winnipeg. And we might see it sometimes that Tyler Myers on the left. We might see it sometimes that he's on the right paired with somebody else. But it's good to have these players, especially at this time of the year, get a feel for what's going to work. And if for some reason it's not working and Tyler decides that, hey, I'm better on the right side, I'm sure they would have that conversation with the coaching staff and try and make adjustments. But at the end of the day, and you talk to these players to a man, they just want to get as many minutes as they can, and they want to help this club win. So I think that is a huge bonus right now for this deep organization.
Brian, Marco Dano was the 13th and often forgotten forward last season with the Jets, but this year it seems he's slimmed down, and he seems like he's playing himself into that 12th forward role potentially. What are your first impressions of Marco Dano this season?
Well, I think he did a great job in the offseason taking away some weight that was slowing him down. And first and foremost for me, just showing the dedication that he realized that he needed to improve himself on and off the ice, and he did it. You look at Patrick Laine, did the same thing. They felt that if they could get quicker, they would be a better player for the team, and they sacrificed a lot of hard work in the offseason. So kudos to those guys right off the bat for getting that done. And the other thing as well with Marco, how he handled last year. Like, Paulie and Dennis and Sarah, we're around these guys each and every day, and you see the players putting the hard work in at practice, and he was not complaining once about being a healthy scratch or not being involved in as many games as he would have liked. And I can tell you, when you're on the road and there's the optional days sometimes that the veterans take, he's out there each and every day working just to make sure that he was staying up to game speed. So he handled last year terrifically. And I think that was, a bonus inside the organization's mind that, hey, if he's that good of a pro off the ice, that there's a chance for this kid, if he comes into camp and does things right, to have a chance to be more of a regular. Now, the forwards are kind of like the defense corps that we talked about earlier on, and I'm not telling anybody something they don't know from a Winnipeg standpoint, but this team is deep. Like, there's not a lot of spots available. So for Marco Dano and for Nick Petan and for some of the other guys that are on the fringe of this whole thing, Christian Vesalainen, come into camp, show what you can do. JC Lapointe, get noticed for the right reason. And I think so far in training camp here, Marco Dano has checked that box for sure. And, he's been able to score twice too, which I think makes him feel good about the hard work that he put in, and had a pretty good smile on his face despite the fact of the final score in Edmonton a couple of nights ago that he was able to make another solid impression for the team. So I think Marco Dano and a lot of those depth guys, are making some decisions harder for the coaching staff, from which a player's standpoint is really all you can do.
You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest is Brian Munns as we're talking about Winnipeg Jets training camp, the Jets having played their first 3 of 7 exhibition games. Brian, Brendan Lemieux is a guy who's interesting to me. I mean, he's certainly bided his time in the AHL. And I go back to last season where Matt Hendricks and the grit that Matt Hendricks brought to the Jets lineup night in, night out, sacrificing his body really at all times, was something that seemed to really appeal to head coach Paul Maurice. Do you think, you know, Brendan Lemieux, the fact he sort of plays the game on that edge, he plays with that grit we saw on Monday night in that fight against Edmonton, the big smile he had on his face after being involved in those fisticuffs, do you think that that element of the game might give him a bit of a leg up in that battle for the final, some final forward spots on this team?
Yeah, I think you're bang on. And I should have mentioned Brendan Lemieux's name in that last statement. He was on the tip of my tongue and it couldn't come to me. But I think that's just the wear and tear of the preseason on the broadcasters too. I think that, Brendan Lemieux is right there. And it's a positive for him for what he's been able to do in the offseason so far. And he does bring a different element. You're right. You know, he spent a lot of time with Matt Hendricks last year, both on and off the ice, and has mentioned Matt numerous times when you talk to him away from the arena, away from game time, on what he was able to do as a pro to develop last season. And you know, he's shown that he can skate in this league. He's shown that I think his body is a lot more ready for the NHL challenge each and every night. And he is one of those guys that isn't afraid to drop the gloves and stand up for his teammates, or if something goes awry that he doesn't like on the ice, all of a sudden the eyes roll back in the head and flippers fall off and away they go. And you don't have a lot of that in the league anymore. So I think he does add an element there that maybe some players don't do as much anymore that could be a bonus for Winnipeg on that fourth line. And one thing, too, when you look at it, is he does have some decent touch around the net to – you know, it's just kind of a molding process right now for the Winnipeg coaching staff. If they were to select him and keep him around this season, is to just kind of getting that whole game going. But, you know, I think the curve right now for Brendan Lemieux is definitely going uphill, and he should be happy with the way training camp has gone so far. And I think right now, if he just continues to kind of stay on that trend, that he's giving himself every opportunity for the coaching staff to make a tough decision. And the big thing for all these guys is so we've said what now? There's four or five names that are really vying for one playing spot and then maybe the extra forward spot. If you don't get it in the next 7-8 days, go down to the Moose and just continue to do what you're going to do, because at some point here, you're going to get that phone call. You're going to be needed. And that's really all those players can do.
Munzee, last question for you. You mentioned the game Thursday night in Edmonton. Eric Comrie got the start. Obviously, Connor Hellebuck got his first start of the preseason last night against the Flames. Are you expecting, out of these last four games, Hellebuck to get two of those four starts? And are you expecting Eric Comrie to possibly get one of those four starts?
So I would, and we don't know the lineup. It's supposed to be announced at some time today. It's a day off for the team. It's their first break since training camp got underway. So we won't know anything this morning, but the lineup for tomorrow's game is expected to come out hopefully sometime later today. I would assume, based on the rotation, that Lauren Brossois would get the game tomorrow. And then to answer your question, yeah, Connor Hellebuck's going to get at least two more minimum. And as Paul Maurice said at the beginning of training camp, Connor can kind of make the decision as to how he feels. They obviously need to make sure that he's ready to go on that first two-game road trip to St. Louis and Dallas. So what Connor Hellebuck wants in this final week of the preseason schedule, he's going to get. And then Brossois and Comrie will fill in the rest. But I think all three goalies have been terrific so far. I know everybody saw the seven goals by now that the Oilers were able to score. He had no chance on at least four of them. Like, there was no – like, Marty Brodeur wasn't going to stop some of those pucks that Connor McDavid and company were putting in. They were just that special of goals for a preseason game that, you know, had some breakdowns in the defensive zone for some of those young Winnipeg players. But I think that's one really, really big positive through the first week of training camp right now, is the job that Wade Flaherty's been able to do to get these goalies to where their game has been so far. Brossois really set the table on Monday night for the expectations, and Comrie played well, and obviously one of the best in the league made some pretty good saves last night too in his preseason debut, and felt that the goals that got in, he knew where the mistakes were. So I think that's a really good thing for Winnipeg going through this preseason right now, is all three of their goalies that they're going to rely on early in the year here feel good about whether they're going to be in the NHL or for Comrie with the Moose, that they're in the right mindset.
Brian Munns is a color analyst for the Winnipeg Jets broadcasts here on TSN 1290. Munzie, appreciate your time this morning. We'll let you get back to some quality family time. Thanks so much for joining us.
All right, boys. See you at the rink tomorrow.
See ya. Take care, Brian. When we come back, we're going to talk about Nikolaj Ehlers. What are fair expectations for the Jets winger as he enters his fourth professional season? You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Ehlers almost lost at the Draisaitl, but he gets away. Ehlers across the line. Ehlers, the wrist shot, scores! Nikolaj Ehlers, on a bit of a slow-developing play at the Oiler line, finds a little bit of room, goes high blocker side, and the Jets have regained the lead.
Nikolaj Ehlers, a key member of the Winnipeg Jets, now entering his fourth year as a member of this team. Of course, he had signed that large contract extension, that seven-year, $42 million contract.
7 years.
7 year, $42 million. That's right. $6 million per season for Nikolaj Ehlers. He's going to be starting that contract this season. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. Had a lovely lunch with Frank and Mauro yesterday.
Say, we literally shook hands with him yesterday.
Yeah, we did. There was some good bro hugs even as well.
Yeah, it was great to catch up with the Zappia brothers.
Yeah, always nice to get together with them, and we had a lovely meal yesterday with them. Broke some bread, as the expression goes. I had some bread. I don't know.
You didn't really break it. You just shoveled it down your gullet.
Yeah, like a duck. I just didn't even chew it. Just swallowed it whole.
Frank and I are very passionate about food, so really, when we get together, all we talk about is food and hockey, and we both have daughters now, so...
There you go. Food, hockey, daughters. What could be better topics of conversation?
Yep.
One better topic of conversation is Nikolaj Ehlers and what fair expectations are for Nikolaj Ehlers as he enters his fourth professional season, coming off a year last year where he bettered his goal total up to 29 goals, dropped his assist total from 39 down to 31, finishing the year with 60 points, a little bit down from 2 years ago.
Drew, I also have hockeydatabase.com.
Finishing the year a little down from 2 years ago when he put up 64 points. And then, of course, as we all well remember, he did put up that goose egg in terms of zero goals in those 15 playoff games the Jets did play. Seven assists, mind you, but zero goals. As we start,
are you going to give us his numbers in the QMJHL as well?
I'm not. Those aren't relevant right now to the topic of conversation. I might not talk to you for the rest of the show, though, is what I'm thinking. So, Dave, exactly. Ignoring the guy in the middle between us, what are fair expectations, do you think, for Nikolaj Ehlers as he starts his fourth professional season? He starts his big contract. What can the Jets hope for him? What is his ceiling in terms of points and then goals and things of that nature?
Well, I mean, again, it's very dependent on if we see him sticking with Patrick Laine, because we know, of course, that there may not, you know, Coach Maurice has talked about there may not be the need to keep those guys. Like, everybody's worried about Brian Little in the middle, but we may see Coach Maurice put Nikolaj Ehlers with Jack Rozovic and Matthew Perreault, or they see Matthew Perreault. So the composition of that second line could change. Sure. We saw it change yesterday, for example, when the coach put Matthew Perreault up on that line. So, to me, I think he this year probably hits a 30-goal plus plateau mark. I would expect him, you know, provided, of course, we always say the little
injuries,
whether he stays healthy. But provided he stays healthy, you know, I could see him hitting 70 points this year. I could see him in the 33, 34 goal range, and you know, similar number of assists roughly. So, my expectation for Nikolaj Ehlers is he's only going to get better. I mean, again, everybody knows about his speed, but you know, we're seeing a maturation in his game now that, you know, comes with being a more veteran player. And it's hard to believe that, you know, a guy I almost remember being, you know, feels like yesterday we were at his draft.
And now
suddenly you've got a guy who's playing in his fourth professional hockey season. So, you know, I would expect Nikolaj Ehlers to continue to grow his game, because we see that from this whole team. We see this team. And that's the one thing about the advantage all of these guys have as a collective group, is that they all seem to be taking the step forward together. So the fact of the matter is, as you know, first of all, there's a pressure because you don't want to be the guy who's dragging that group back. But at the same time, there's also a real good benefit because as these guys continue to get better, Patrick Laine gets better, you know, Blake Wheeler's getting better, Mark Scheifele's getting better, that benefits your game, especially guys like Ehlers who have a shot. You're going to get a lot of setup guys who, you know, guys who have the hands like a Blake Wheeler or a Mark Scheifele to get you a pass if you're playing with them and to score some more goals.
It's a big year for Ehlers, Dave, right? I mean, Drew mentioned, you know, he didn't score any goals in the playoffs. It's the first year of his big 7-year contract.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree with Dave. I mean, I think his upside in the NHL is 35 to 40 goals, 80 points. I'm not saying that he does that this year, but I wouldn't at all be shocked if he had, you know, 35 goals, 70 points this year. And, you know, everybody knows, as Dave mentioned, Ehlers is one of the fastest guys in the league. He's maybe got top five hands in the league. His skill level is so high. It's ultra high. It's higher than, I'd say, 95% of the players in the NHL. I mean, he's the, you know, the old saying, you know, he could stick handle in a phone booth, right? I mean, the things that he can do at top speed is incredible. But for me, I mean, what I'm watching when I watch Nikolaj Ehlers, you know the points are going to come. You know he's going to score somewhere around 30, 35 goals, and we talked about it, 60 to 70 points. But it's how he rounds out the rest of his game, right? How he plays in the defensive zone. And you know, Dave mentions that, you know, maybe we see Ehlers on the third line and, you know, maybe we see a different center at some points of the season. Maybe Jack Roslovic eventually becomes the second line center. But the point is, I mean, he's going to get his points. I think what he knows that he has to work on is driving to the net a little bit harder, finishing those checks. He's not a physical player, but battling for the puck retrieval.
Going to the little bit more
of the dirty areas. And we saw the little line, a Ehlers line, get hemmed in their own zone. That's something, an element of the game that I think, you know, he could improve on. So for me, that's what I'm looking for in Ehlers this year. I think the points are going to come. We know, and I agree with Dave, he's 22 years old. I mean, 64 points is not going to be his career high. It's probably going to be somewhere around 75, 80, whatever.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Saturday morning here on TSN Radio 1290. We're talking about Nikolaj Ehlers and what fair expectations are for the Winnipeg Jets winger as he starts his fourth career professional season. Paul Maurice was asked about Nikolaj Ehlers earlier this week as well. I believe it was yesterday, or prior to the Jets' first preseason game against Minnesota back on Monday. This is what Paul Maurice had to say about Nikolaj Ehlers.
We've got to be a little bit careful of our expectations not being exponential with these kids. There is a normal curve for them, so if he can play better and score a bit more, we've got just a fantastic hockey player, and he's a young guy. He looks more sure on the ice with everything he does, more powerful with everything he does. That just comes with age and maturity. There's less trying to read the game. It just happens for him now. And that's true of all these young guys. They get faster because they don't have to think as much. They've seen it enough times. And he looks good. I got lots of confidence in him having a great year.
You know, in addition to Paul Maurice's comments there, you know, Jason Bell wrote about this in the Winnipeg Free Press this week, sort of talking to Ehlers and about how Ehlers is becoming more of an all-around player, and he's maybe less risky than he used to be when he first broke into the league, realizing that speed isn't the be-all and end-all. Sometimes he will just take what's there for him as opposed to trying to do too much and maybe, you know, having a turnover, you know, be caused in the neutral zone, which leads to a rush going the other way. So signs of maturity for a young player as he starts sort of that next stage in his career.
Right. And, you know, as you know, Drew, a lot of hockey happens along the board. So it's winning board battles. It's making the simple play out of your own zone, right? I think that's something, you know, that has improved a lot in Nikolaj Ehlers' game. It's his play on the defensive side of the puck because we know that he can make plays. And it goes back to what we said before. I mean, it's subjective, but whatever number you want to throw out there, I think most people agree, you know, that his offensive numbers are only going to go up, right? 64 points in his second year, and as you mentioned, set a career high of 29 goals, but it's all of those little things in hockey that I think you're expecting to get better as well. And Nikolaj Ehlers knows that. He's a student of the game, another very smart hockey player along with Josh Morrissey. And
sure,
I think you're going to see, you know, a much better defensive forward this year and for the years to come.
It'll be interesting. Nikolaj Ehlers, of course, a key component of the Winnipeg Jets as he begins a 7-year, $42 million contract this season. When we come back, we're going to look around the league as training camp and preseason. Week one is just about wrapping up. Joshua Clipperton from the Canadian Press is going to join us next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From the Canadian Press, he's the national hockey writer. He's a good friend of the program. Joshua Clipperton joins the show. Joshua, good morning. Thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. How was the offseason?
Oh, it was pretty good, you know. It's never as quiet as you'd like it to be, but no complaints.
There you go.
It was beautiful weather at the cottage, so it was a good time off, but ready to go.
There you go, exactly. Ready to go. As we're really about a week or so into training camp, where the most of the teams are beginning to make some of their first cuts, maybe get some of their roster decisions underway. We're going to look around the entire NHL with you, as we look at training camp. I want to start with you in Ottawa. You wrote about the Senators earlier this week, ahead of the Senators and Leafs. They played a preseason game earlier this week. I think I played a couple of them actually earlier this week. If you're an Ottawa Senators fan, as you're entering the season, you don't have a first-round draft pick. As you know, that's going to the Colorado Avalanche. What are you hanging your hat on if you're a fan of the Ottawa Senators this season?
Well, there's frankly not a lot to hang your hat on right now. I mean, there are some young players, some young pieces to look at, but I mean, it's pretty disappointing if you're an Ottawa fan to see the team talk about a rebuild and then obviously don't have that pick, like you mentioned, going from a team that was, quote unquote, going for it last November to a team that was pivoting to a rebuild in February, if you believe the timeline presented by management. I mean, obviously Brady Tkachuk is their first-round pick from this past year, a big body guy. Interested to see if he can stick with the club. Obviously, we spoke to Guy Boucher about Alex Formenton back in Lucan, Ontario, where we were for the first preseason game. And, he's got a lot of speed. Boucher turned some heads by comparing his speed to Connor McDavid. I don't think he was comparing the player to Connor McDavid. He was just comparing the foot speed to Connor McDavid. So he's another guy. I think he scored a nice goal last night in preseason against the Blackhawks in Ottawa. So there's some young guys to look to, but I mean, the blue line is looking pretty bare, obviously, after the Carlson trade. Their two goalies had, pretty bad seasons last year. So there's a lot of clouds in the nation's capital, unfortunately, and not a lot of silver lining right now.
Josh, you were at the Leafs-Sabres game last night. Johnny Tavares scored his first two goals on home ice. One player that was not in the Leafs lineup, as you know, is William Nylander, and he's still looking for a new contract. How close are they to getting that contract done, and is there a chance that this is going to drag on longer than we expected?
Well, I think it already has dragged on longer than we expected, frankly. These guys on both sides seem to be a bit dug in right now. I mean, reportedly, Nylander's looking, his camp is looking for somewhere in the neighborhood of $8 million. There's no chance the Leafs will do that. I mean, they do have cap space for this season, but you also have Mitch Marner and obviously Austin Matthews who need contracts. They can become restricted free. Well, they can become restricted free agents next summer. Their camps are also able to be in negotiations right now. I think that, I mean, when it comes down to it, Nylander really doesn't have a whole lot of leverage. Being a restricted free agent, the only leverage is an offer sheet. And as you guys know, offer sheets don't happen very often, if at all, anymore. So at some point, I'm assuming that he's just going to have to come down to whatever number the Leafs are offering. I think it's probably going to end up being a bridge deal because it sounds like his camp wants big money for 7 or 8 years at this point. So it'll probably be a bridge deal. I'm not sure if it's going to be in the Reinhardt sort of 3.6 per for 2 years type of ballpark, but it could be. If you look at their numbers, are similar. Now, I'm not saying that they're similar players because they're different players, but those types of numbers are pretty, their numbers are pretty similar. So you could be looking at that eventually. I just think for Nylander, he just got to get here at some point. Like he's got to get into camp. They're moving on without him, honestly. They obviously want to have him, but they're moving on without him at this point. And, he will be here eventually. But I mean, when you miss training camp, it can take you, 3, 4, 5 weeks to get ready. And then by then we're talking you know, it could be late November or late October, early November into middle of November when he starts feeling comfortable. So I think from his side, unfortunately, he's going to have to crack at some point because I don't see Kyle Dubas budging from where he's dug his heels in.
You know, Joshua, all around the league, everybody was talking about the Max Domi sucker punch on Aaron Ekblad. He was suspended for the remainder of the preseason. Do you think that was a harsh enough penalty?
On the surface, no, because I think that, I mean, I think a lot of people, you can just make the argument. It's just obviously, it's really not a strong enough penalty, especially when he's not going to miss one single regular season game. I think now on the other side, you know, he's with a new team and not getting chemistry with lineups. There is something to be said about that. I found it funny, and if I'd been in the scrum, I might have put this to him yesterday. He says he wasn't trying to hurt Aaron Ekblad with those punches, and I can't, you know, reconcile how any punch has ever been thrown where you're not at least trying to hurt someone a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, he got 5 games in the preseason. It's going to hurt him in terms of chemistry. I mean, even if he'd been suspended 1 game, it would have been a huge hit to him because the Canadians open up the regular season here in Toronto on opening night. So obviously for him playing with the Habs in Toronto on opening night, you know, the team his dad played for, obviously the team he grew up idolizing, wears number 13 because of Matt Sundin. It would have been a stiff penalty. Now, unfortunately, the league seems to have put the Panthers in a position where they have to dish out punishment. And if they follow through on some of the words that Aaron Ekblad, shared yesterday about how they're going to get their pound of flesh. There's going to be more discipline if something comes from that, because, we've seen if a player or a team issues a threat and they follow through with it, the suspensions are even harsher. So it's a situation, if the league had maybe suspended him for even one regular season game, it probably would have been the end of it. But, I think that they play Montreal and Florida play in late December, so there's going to be a while to wait, but it'll be a game to watch.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290. Our guest is Joshua Clipperton of the Canadian Press. You know, Joshua, last year the Colorado Avalanche made the jump from 30th in the league after that woeful season all the way to becoming a playoff team, and obviously falling at the hands of the Nashville Predators in the first round. Looking around the league, what team to you is a team that can make that jump from a non-playoff team or was a bottom feeder to being a team that can make the playoffs in this coming season?
Well, the obvious choice to make a jump would be Edmonton, and that's not obviously a bottom feeder, but a team that really, you know, struggled last year. I don't think that they're going to be, you know, at the top half of the Western Conference, but I think that they'll be in a battle for the a playoff spot. I look at the team that I saw last night, Buffalo, as a team that I'm not sure that they're going to be able to squeak in the playoffs, but I'm not too sure about their goaltending yet. But they're a team that I think has got the pieces in place to start to build. You know, they've got obviously Jack Eichel, they've got Rasmus Dahlin, speaking of the Leafs defenseman Sandin, Rasmus Dahlin here. The number one pick, the defenseman that everyone's raving about, obviously. There's been I don't have to say much more about him. Then you've got Sam Reinhart. We saw Casey Mittelstadt last night. So they got some good pieces. I think they're a team that could surprise a few people. And then I look out west. I mean, the team I used to cover, Vancouver, obviously not really going to be in the playoff hunt, I don't think. I mean, they could be in it by, you know, the end of February, March with some of the young guys they have. So I don't really see a team like Colorado that's going to make, you know, completely flip the standings. But there are some exciting options out there for teams that you know, that have had some dark days that are going to hopefully for their fan bases make it interesting this year.
Now, Josh, you mentioned the Edmonton Oilers and you mentioned the Vancouver Canucks. So I wanted to actually ask you about the other team that's out there in Western Canada, the Calgary Flames. And we know they made the big trade with the Carolina Hurricanes. They shipped out Dougie Hamilton and Michael Ferland, and they brought in Elias Lindholm and Noah Hanifin. They signed James Neal from the Vegas Golden Knights. Isn't it time that this team does more and not just makes the playoffs but does something when you consider that they've got Shawnee Monahan up front, Johnny Gaudreau, Matthew Tkachuk, and now they've got James Neal. They've gone out and, you know, acquired a big-name free agent in addition to, you know, having some really good pieces on the back end there.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the pressure's on guys like Gaudreau and Monahan especially to take the next step. I mean, they are obviously top-end talent. I mean, any team in the league would have them on their top line. This team is, I'm sure, frustrating for Flames fans to watch. I saw them enough out in Vancouver when I was there covering the Canucks, and never quite been able to put it together for whatever reason, whether it's been goaltending, whether it's been, different reasons that I can't really explain, because you look on paper, they should be a lot better. I mean, last year's collapse was epic. You know, they were in a playoff spot, and then I think they lost something like 9 or 10 or of 12, and then that was basically it. It cost Glenn Gulson his job. They brought Bill Peters in, different kind of coach. Like you said, they've remade their blue line. They've remade their leadership group in a way with James Neal. I'll be interested to see how it all plays out, how they line up. I think, trips to China are not easy in the beginning of the season. The Canucks did it last year. Then we saw Ottawa completely collapse last year when they went to Sweden. Now, obviously, Colorado went the other way when they went to Sweden. So maybe there's not as much to be said for that. But starting training camp in China, I mean, it can be a bonding experience. But I think that, it's not the easiest when you got a new coach and a new, new set of guys that are trying to find their spot in the lineup. So, I mean, it'll be interesting to see how Calgary starts out of the gate. But you're right. I think it is time for some of those elite young guys to step up, because I don't think playoffs are frankly good enough at this point after last year, because they expected to make the playoffs last year. I think they expect to take an even bigger step.
You know, Joshua, last week you wrote about beards and mustaches being okay in Toronto now that Kyle Dubas is the general manager. It seems almost silly to ask, but is that his way of putting his stamp on this team?
No, I mean, in fairness, those are stories that we've sort of been needling about all summer. I think more, it's just a wider kind of narrative of Dubas now being in charge. Oh no, Lou Lamoriello had a lot of rules, and that was just sort of one of the ones that was more ridiculous. From the outside, it seemed. There was rules about in-game promotions. There was rules about high numbers. There was rules about a rookie's not allowed to do an in-game interview unless he scored. Like all these things, and it was sort of a wider sort of narrative of control and I'm the boss kind of thing. And I think that Kyle Dubas is, he's 32 years old. He's got, multiple players that are older than him. And I think he's putting his stamp on the team in a way. But I think that the overall, culture isn't changing. I think they're loosening the reins a little bit, but I mean, he's still the boss. It's not like the inmates are running the asylum now. He's got his own rules, but, Lou was the extreme. I think Kyle's loosening the reins a little bit, like I said. But I think it'll be. It's not you're going to see guys, Austin Matthews with the big mustache. I think it's more just letting guys express themselves, not worry about little things, and just focus on the game.
Joshua Clipperton is the national hockey writer for the Canadian Press. Joshua, always appreciate your time and insight. We'll do it again real soon, buddy. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Have a great weekend.
Likewise, you too, Joshua. When we come back, we talk about the Jets' special teams. The power play and the penalty kill were both top 10 last season. Can the Jets afford to have a dip in one of their two special teams performances? You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Wheeler on the far side lost his footing. Gets back up, plays it back to Buffalo. The line scores! Patrick Kleine! Power play goal, Winnipeg Jets! And this game is knotted up 1-1.
The prolific Winnipeg Jets power play striking last year in that clip. Wheeler to Laine, something Jets fans got used to hearing and want to hear more this coming season. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN 1290. It's Saturday morning. This segment brought to you by our good friends at Keener Jerseys, specializing in customization services and branded team apparel. Keener Jerseys is changing the game with world-class craftsmanship and unparalleled service. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, visit KeenerJerseys.com or check out their showroom at 982 Portage Avenue. That's the corner of Portage and Sherbourne. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you. The Jets' penalty kill and power play last season, both in the top 10, the power play finishing 5th in the NHL at 23.4%. The Jets' penalty kill finishing tied for 7th at 81.8%, a very good performance by the Jets' special teams last season. Entering this year, of the two, and maybe the answer is none, of the two, which of the two can afford to see a little bit of slippage, a little bit of regression to the mean between the Jets' penalty kill and the Jets' power play?
I would say the power play, Drew, and the reason for that is because the Jets are so good at 5-on-5. They're one of the best offensive teams in the league, so I think you could expect a little bit of a dip in the power play. And as you mentioned, I mean, the power play and the penalty kill were a huge reason why the Jets finished second in the NHL and had the best home record in the NHL, especially at home. Their power play was pretty unstoppable. How many times did we see Patrick Laine rip home a power play goal, right? So I think, you know, the power play, you can afford to have a little bit less success. And when you're talking about, you know, percentages, I think, you know, we talk a lot about the Edmonton Oilers and how much they struggled last year. Mm-hmm. Their power play, even though you've got Connor McDavid, even though you've got Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, Leon Draisaitl, you know, Oscar Klefbom, Milan Lucic, yeah, and all these guys, they had the 31st power play in the league. And that was a big reason why they brought in new assistant coaches, right? They brought in Glenn Gullitson. They brought in Trent Yanni. I think if you're the Jets, you hope that your power play and your penalty kill are kind of around where they are. And obviously the coaching staff would love to have the top-ranked power play and the top-ranked penalty kill in the league, or, you know, top three in both category. But I think what you want is you want to compete at a similar elite level. You want to keep your power play and your penalty kill top 10 in the league. And I think, you know, the power play was something that the Jets really struggled with in previous years. And obviously having a guy like Patrick Laine, an elite goal scorer, helps. But I think also the Jets, you know, changed their scheme. They started to move the puck a little bit quicker, and they mm-hmm. went to a different format on the power play. And now you see Blake Wheeler controlling the power play. I mean, Blake Wheeler, I believe, was second in the NHL in power play assists last year. He might have been first, but I know he was first or second. And, you know, Blake Wheeler is the guy that sets it up, Dave, on the half wall. And then, you know, you've got a lot of weapons. Mark Scheifele, sometimes you see him in the slot there. He can unleash the shot. And then, obviously, Patrick Laine is always set up in his wheelhouse. So I think you hope that the power play and the penalty kill stay elite, stay top 10, even top 5. But I think they can probably afford a bit of a dip in the power play. But, by the way, I don't expect that. And it's because the Jets are going to put out the same personnel. When you're talking about, you know, who's going to go out there, I mean, we mentioned Scheifele and Wheeler and Laine, Ehlers.
Sure.
You know, Dustin Byfuglien plays on the top power play.
They have
Jacob
weapons.
Trouba, they have weapons. Nothing's changed there. The only thing that's really changed is on the penalty kill, no Matt Hendricks. You're not going to have Joel Armia. Joel Armia is an excellent penalty killer, but you still have Adam Lowry. You still have Brandon Tanev, Andrew Kopp.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Brian Little plays the penalty kill. You see Blake Wheeler out there on the penalty kill. So I don't see the penalty kill, Drew, taking a big dip this year. I mean, maybe, you know, you see it go down a little bit, but as far as the power play goes, with all of the offensive firepower, I just can't see the Jets not having a top 10 power play in the league, maybe top 5.
You mentioned, of course, the 5-on-5 performance of the Jets last year. The Jets tied fourth for the most goals in 5-on-5 with 176 goals in 5-on-5 situations. So the offense for the Jets obviously clicking both 5-on-5 and then when they had a 5-on-4 power play situation as well.
And you know what, I'm looking at the segment trying to decide which is the one that can afford to take that step back. I would say it's probably the penalty kill. And the reason I say that is because I was looking at the past six Stanley Cup champions. And they generally were in the top 5 or 10 of their power play. Their penalty kill actually to a team was usually in the 10 to 20 ranking mm-hmm. throughout the regular season. So I'm just saying that the teams that have gone on to have success in the Stanley Cup have been teams that have generally been able to maintain a pretty high power play percentage.
Washington, and, Pittsburgh,
yeah,
always top 10 in the league.
Actually, LA was kind of the anomaly. Yeah. I think LA's power play was 11th, but for the in both the years that they won. But I think for the most part, teams have been either top 5 or top 10 in the power play percentage, whereas their penalty kill percentage was sometimes as low. I think Chicago's one year was 19th one of the years they won the Stanley Cup. So I guess looking at past performance as an indication of future success, then
a bit of a risky thing to do.
Well, yes and no. I mean, if there's a consistent basis for which you're looking at it, and
sure,
you're looking at it and you're looking over the last 7 or 8 years and you're saying, well, this is what these Stanley Cups, I'm not saying it's automatic.
Mm-hmm.
I'm simply saying based on the past success of the last 7 or 8 Stanley Cup champions.
Dave, you were crunching some numbers. I like it.
I was doing some research for this segment. So I'm just saying that from my perspective, you can probably afford to drop a little in your PK, and as long as your PP is staying high.
I was just crunching salami sandwiches.
We know that. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290. We're talking about the Jets' special teams last season and which of the penalty kill or the power play could afford to see a little bit of a regression. And if you remember,
By the way, it's an interesting segment, and I know you wanted to talk about it today because
I put it in the show plan.
Well, You know, this Jets team, you know, everybody knows that, you know, they almost won the President's Trophy last year, and a lot of that was, you know, because of the way Connor Hellebuck played. A lot of that was because of their home record. But special teams, I think, over the years has become an increasing part, important part of hockey. It was always important, but, you know, Dave mentions the power play. I mean, that was a huge reason. I keep going back to the Edmonton Oilers, but that was a huge reason sure. why they missed the playoffs last year. You know, it's one thing, you know, if your power play struggles at times, but, you know, if you have one of the, you know, let's say bottom five power plays in the league, I mean, you're talking about an extra goal a game, right? That's the difference in today's NHL. So, I mean, the Jets, with all of the weapons they have, and not just the skill that they are able to put out there on the power play, Drew, but, I mean, they figured it out. I mean, they really, you know, it's a well-oiled machine right now. When that Jets first power play goes out there, they expect to score every shift. And I'm not saying that the second power play unit doesn't expect to score every shift, but especially that first power play unit
sure.
might be the best in the league, actually.
It certainly got its choice of dynamic weapons. And then in five-on-three situations, which obviously happened a lot less in the course of the season, yeah. the Jets had the most goals five-on-three in the entire league. I think they scored six goals last year with five-on-three, so they were certainly dynamic when they had a two-man advantage as well. The thing about the Jets' penalty kill that I'm really watching for this year, if you remember last year, is they were willing to give up a lot of shots,
yep.
but the shots had to come from the outside.
Yep.
They wouldn't give up anything sort of in the middle of the ice between the circles. They tried their best.
It was a less aggressive penalty kill.
It was a less aggressive penalty kill that certainly kept everything as much as possible to the outside, and they said, we're not going to give up the middle of the ice,
yep.
but we're going to let you take everything you want from the outside. And we have the confidence in Connor Hellebuck or whoever the goalie was on a given night that they're going to make the save as long as the shot is coming from the outside.
Right.
And it was an interesting strategy, and a lot of the analytics said that the Jets' penalty kill is eventually going to regress because most teams, even giving up those shots from the outside, are eventually going to have more goals scored against them.
Well, Drew, just to cut you off there, I think, you know, a big part of that strategy, I think, you know, that strategy works if your defensemen are able to take care of business down low, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because as you mentioned, what you're doing is, you know, you're maybe exposing the, you know, the big shot from the point, but, you know, that's part of the strategy. And I think last year, you know, when you had Josh Morrissey out there with Jacob Trouba, or, you know, you had Buff out there with Kulikov, or Myers played a lot on the penalty kill. I mean, they were able to handle business in front of the net. The Jets have, you know, big skilled defensemen on the back end, and, you know, I think, you know, that strategy doesn't always work. The more skilled the power play, it's tougher to contain players down low because you're always going to have, you know, uneven situations. But
sure.
I think that's something to look out for this year. But, I mean, they had the seventh-ranked penalty kill in the league last year. So
they had success last year. The question is, does it regress given, you know, if they deploy the same, and I imagine they're going to deploy the same sort of strategy like they did last year for the most part because it was successful. Just like there'd be no reason to reinvent their power play wheel because it was successful. It's just sort of, it's going to be interesting to see if, you know, if in the course of playing more games and in the course of giving up more opportunities, do the numbers begin to dip down to the middle of the pack in the NHL? Does everything regress to the mean, or are they able to keep up at the same standard that they had through the first, you know, 82 games of last season when they deployed this new unit with all the different weapons that they had out there? It's something I think that's going to be very interesting, at least early in the year, for Jets fans to keep an eye on.
There's one certainty about the Jets penalty kill, and that's Brandon Tanev and Josh Morrissey are going to block a lot of shots.
It's generally, Brandon Tanev will throw whatever part of his body he's able to, you know, in the lane to block a shot. He certainly isn't afraid to sacrifice in that sense. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Florida Panthers. They were certainly in the news this week as Aaron Ekblad got sucker punched by Max Domi. The Panthers, a lot of people's sort of pick to come out from being a non-playoff team to being into the playoffs. Jameson Olive, Florida Panthers website reporter, is going to join us next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's Saturday morning, and we're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.